Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. When was the last time you heard the word missionary? Well, you're going to be hearing it a lot today on the Albert Mohler Program. I'm going to have a very special guest. David Sills is professor of cultural anthropology and Christian missions at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. He is one of the frontline missiologists. That means someone who's a specialist in the missionary movement today. And has a really vast experience as a missionary himself. He's the author of several books, including the new book, Reaching and Teaching, A Call to Great Commission Obedience. We're going to be talking to Professor David Sills about why the missionary calling today is even more needful than in times past, with so many unreached people groups. And why we're going to be talking about as well, why so many evangelicals seem to have kind of fallen off the missionary movement map. They simply do not understand what's at stake, what's going on. And we're going to be talking about how we're really kind of breaking up the stereotype of what a missionary is and how a missionary becomes a missionary. All that coming up on the Albert Mohler Program, a conversation you will not want to miss. First, to review some issues in the news. I don't know if you've been looking at all these headlines about abortion all of a sudden. Now, again, I can't talk about this today. I mean, we're talking here in late April of 2010. We can't talk about this today without realizing that back in 1973, when the U.S. Supreme Court handed down the decision, Roe v. Wade, they said, the majority, a one-vote majority, by the way, the majority said, we hope to put the issue of abortion to rest. Put the issue of abortion to rest, for crying out loud. 30-plus years later, we're looking at headlines virtually every day. And after the passage of the Obama administration health care reform plan, there's now a flurry of legislative activity trying to restrict abortion and deal with abortion. The headline yesterday in USA Today, states seek new ways to restrict abortions. And this was yesterday, as we're talking on Monday's edition of USA Today. It lists this. Oklahoma, one of five abortion bills the Senate passed last week, would require doctors to show an ultrasound image to the woman, but she can avert her eyes. How's that for a piece of legislation? You know, that shows you in this day after Roe v. Wade, how legislatures have to take the most extraordinary actions to protect unborn human life. Governor Brad Henry, this is yesterday's paper. A Democrat vetoed it Friday and an override attempt is expected. Well, let me just update you on that. The override is taken. It has taken place. Just about an hour ago, earlier in the afternoon here, the Oklahoma Senate vetoed the veto. They voted to override the veto, and thus these laws become law immediately. They take effect immediately. Jim Talley, reporting for the Associated Press, said the narrow override votes in the Republican-controlled Senate came a day after the House voted overwhelmingly to do the same. Governor Henry, a Democrat, had said the measures were an unlawful intrusion into citizens' private lives and decisions and lacked exemptions for rape and incest victims. It's really, really interesting. The New York-based Center for Reproductive Rights said that this new bill represents one of the strictest anti-abortion measures in the country. And, they evidently are saying that a lot, because yesterday they were saying the same thing about a law in Nebraska where the governor signed into law a measure that would ban most abortions at the 20th week of pregnancy based on a new rationale that the fetus feels pain. Folks, I have looked at the legislative background to this particular bill in Nebraska, and if you are a morally sensitive human being, how in the world can you look at the data on fetal pain and not understand the humanity of that unborn baby? I simply do not understand it. Other states are considering legislation. Kansas legislation would require doctors to give a medical diagnosis justifying late-term abortions under a new bill. And let's remember that Kansas is really front and center for late-term abortions, has been for the recent decades. In Utah, a new bill makes self-induced abortion a homicide. It was prompted by a girl who paid a man $150 to beat her to try to induce a miscarriage. That's the front page of yesterday's USA Today. Now, one of the interesting things going on here is that, indeed, some of these laws are addressed to protecting doctors, and this is the Oklahoma bill, as I recall, protecting doctors from liability damages if they withhold information or provide inaccurate information about a woman's pregnancy. You know what's going on there? That is doctors who are seeing the likelihood of some kind of abnormality or defect. It could be Down syndrome or it could be something else. And they know that if they say to a woman that this is so, she may well abort that baby. You talk about a crisis of conscience. Now, folks, this is where we are. Once abortion became the law of the land, we institutionalized these horrifying moral situations. Speaking of institutionalizing horrible situations, the front page of the New York Times business section. How's this for a headline? Sex ads on Craigslist pay off in more revenue and scrutiny. Now, folks, I had heard something about this in times past. I remember when there was a review by several state attorneys general looking into the question of Craigslist and prostitution. But get this, Brad Stone, a business reporter for the New York Times, reporting that many of the ads on Craigslist blatantly advertise prostitution. They are expected to bring $36 million of revenue into Craigslist. That is three times the revenue in last year's projection. Here, more from the story by Brad Stone. Last week, an example of a federal crackdown, the FBI arrested 14 members of the Gambino crime family on charges of, among other things, selling the sexual services of girls ages 15 to 19 on Craigslist. Absolutely amazing stuff. If you're not looking at this kind of data, you're not looking at this kind of development, you may have a fundamentally different, and that means wrong, understanding of American culture. Because this is telling us that there is big business in child prostitution in the United States that is aided and abetted, in this case, by a digital classified ad system. You've got folks saying things like this. This is Rachel Lloyd, executive director of the Girls Educational and Mentoring Services, which provides assistance to sexually exploited and trafficked women, says this: Craigslist has not given any indication that they are outraged and disturbed that their site is the primary way children are brought into the country. This is absolutely frightening stuff. Windfall from sex ads at Craigslist and what is now known that it is being used to bring in children for child prostitution, not to mention prostitution writ large. Folks, you want to understand the scope of human depravity. All you have to do is look at a story like this, because this is what human beings do. This is who human beings are. And not only does this seize upon the sexual lasciviousness and the lust of a people, it institutionalizes it and it commercializes it and it makes a profit off of it. And, you know, the beat goes on. And this is where we're living. You know, there is in this country right now a prostitution industrial complex. And it may be indeed the world's oldest profession, as the saying goes. Human beings are not newly experiencing the temptations of lust. But what is new is the facilitation by means of digital billboards and other services of linking up people who have horribly, horribly sinful desires with those who are willing to profit by meeting those desires. And we're talking here about sex trafficking that is one of the greatest scandals in the world today. And we're talking about postmodern, digitalized, advanced America being very much a part of this. And it's not just Craigslist. It's not just a news story here in the New York Times. It's a society that looks the other way as this goes on. And that's a very, very sad thing. Speaking of sad developments, have you seen all the headlines about schools that are being sued and challenged by groups like the ACLU for holding their commencement ceremonies in churches? Interesting story in USA Today. Is a church a graduation venue? The ACLU says no, but schools disagree. There's a New England school. The focus here is Connecticut, where five Connecticut school districts last year said they would hold their June commencements at an area megachurch. One of these school districts decided to go ahead. And here, the Enfield School Board plans to hold its commencement at the First Cathedral. That's a Baptist megachurch in Bloomfield, Connecticut. You know, what's really interesting here is that the options are few. By the way, the school district could rent a secular arena, a public arena, a civic center that would cost about $70,000. Renting the church is about $16,000, and the church has big screen television so that nobody misses their child. Can seat more than 3,000 people. The people who are complaining here, very, very interesting. One of them, Sandra Staub, legal director for ACLU of Connecticut, says of the church building, quote, with its red carpeted stained glass amphitheater, it's clearly a church. Thus, it's a violation of the separation of church and state. You have people like Barry Lynn, coming out to say, I can't think of a clearer way to promote religion than to have a public ceremony in a private religious space. Well, folks, this just tells you how far the secularists will push this kind of argument. They're afraid even, and I'm not making this up, I'm reading this from yesterday's edition of USA Today, they're afraid of red carpet. That's just too religious. A separation of church and state violation. If the building has red carpet and stained glass, we got a constitutional crisis. Folks, what we have here is a crisis of sanity in postmodern America. Back to talk about the missionary challenge, not just back then, but right now. You're listening to the Albert Miller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Miller Program. The Christian Church has been a missionary movement from the very beginning. Just look at the Apostle Paul. Over the last several generations, the Christian movement has been known for sending missionaries to the far reaches of the world. And yet, for many people today, the word missionary is something of an antiquarian sound. Many Christians today are just woefully informed about what's going on right now in global missions and about the shape of the global missions challenge for us as evangelical Christians as we think about taking the gospel around the world. I want to give you a briefing today, kind of an update on where we stand. We're going to talk about the need. We're going to talk about the call, and we're going to be talking about how missions is actually done in this postmodern world. I need help in doing that, and I've got help in Dr. David Sills, who is A.P. Faye Stone Professor of Christian Missions and Cultural Anthropology at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. He joined the Southern Seminary faculty several years ago after serving as a missionary church planter and general evangelist in Ecuador, up high in the Andes, as a seminary professor at the Ecuadorian Baptist Theological Seminary, and is rector and professor at the Baptist Seminary there, with Global Outreach International also. He has been deeply involved in the missionary work for many years. He is a specialist in cultural anthropology and in missions, holds doctorates, including the Doctor of Missiology and the Ph.D. degree. He's the author of several books, including the book I want you to know about first and foremost, entitled The Missionary Call, Find Your Place in God's Plan for the World, and his new book, Reaching and Teaching, A Call to Great Commission Obedience. David Sills, welcome to the Albert Miller Program.
Thank you so much for having me on.
All right. Now, evangelical Christians know those great songs we sing about the missionary challenge, about taking the gospel to the ends of the world, about rescue the perishing. But many evangelicals today seem not to know that that the global need for evangelization is greater now than it ever has been, and the urgency of missionary service is more intensive now than it ever has been.
Yes, absolutely. There much of our world that still sits in darkness has never heard the gospel. We need to take the gospel to them, and to that end, we need to send missionaries to the far reaches of the world.
Now, some people, as we just need to acknowledge this, some people hearing this conversation are going to go, wow, these people really believe that the world is separated between light and darkness, with light being where the gospel is known, where Christ is known, and darkness where Christ is not known. And these people, you're listening, talk on the radio program today, really believe that persons are eternally lost without coming to a saving knowledge of Jesus Christ as Lord. Isn't that the theology that drives the missionary movement?
That is the theology that drives us. We want people to hear the gospel. We believe that you must hear the gospel to be born again. We realize there are many parts of our world that still have not.
Now, you are particularly well-equipped to deal with a lot of these challenges. You have a background in cultural anthropology. One of the things we're going to talk about is that many people are arguing that missions is basically a form of cultural imperialism. And so we'll get to that in a moment. But before ever getting there, I just want to ask us, how do we arrive at this present moment? I think the average Christian is probably thinking that from the time of the Apostle Paul to the missionaries who are serving around the world right now, there has been an unbroken line of missionary faithfulness. And that's not exactly true. Kind of give us the story.
No, that's not exactly true. There was some missionary advance, especially in the Roman Catholic Church toward the end of the 18th century, when the Jesuit branch of the Roman Catholic mission effort was dissolved. It was a period of time when Roman Catholicism began to diminish their missions advance. And then in 1792, there was a Baptist missionary from London who sailed to India believing that God was using people to go to the gospel to reach the needs of those who need to hear.
Okay. So we're talking about barely 200 years of the modern missionary movement, and in this case, an evangelical movement, a movement led by and driven by evangelical Christians who believe in the simplicity of the gospel of Jesus Christ, that all who call upon the name of the Lord shall be saved. Then, as Paul says, but how can they call upon the one in whom they have not heard? And how will they hear without a preacher? So we really do believe that we are justified by faith alone through Christ alone, and that it is indeed the gospel that is the only message that saves. And when we understand that, we come to see that there really is an imperative, because we have to divide the world between those who already know Christ and those who do not yet know Christ. So, David, let me just ask you this. Why is missions defined as one thing and evangelism as something else?
We normally think of missions as crossing boundaries intentionally for the sake of sharing the gospel. It could be socioeconomic, it could be geopolitical, it could be linguistic, but it's intentionally crossing boundaries, whereas evangelism might be sharing the gospel with those much like ourselves.
So you're talking about going across the street, that's evangelism. But going across the ocean, just to simplify here, that's missions.
That would be in very simple terms, yes.
Now, you do have a background in cultural anthropology, and a part of what's going on there is the understanding that there is a cross-cultural experience to most missions. It's not just like you're going across the ocean to speak to yourself. You're going across the ocean to speak to someone who has a very different cultural, linguistic understanding, a very different ethnicity and worldview.
That's right. And we need to make sure that they hear the gospel in a culturally appropriate way, a way that they can understand within their worldview. If a Hindu hears the gospel and he is thinking in terms of reincarnation and karma, to him, eternal life and being born again have totally different meanings than they would to the missionary who's actually preaching the message.
So when you talk about applying cultural anthropology to modern missions, you're talking about needing to know not only the gospel, but the people to whom you're going to be trying to convey the gospel.
That's right. And that is one of the difficult things in the missionary task, is incarnating your life into another missionary setting, into another context, learning their language, learning their worldview, the rules for engagement in everyday cultural life.
You know, the more evangelicals come to know, I think, about modern missiology, the modern missionary movement, and what's behind it, the more they're going to see that this is really one of the cutting-edge intellectual areas of the Christian life, as well as one of the cutting-edge practical areas of the Christian life, because, you know, quite frankly, the kind of knowledge and sophisticated Christian intellectual work that is necessary in order to know how effectively to take the gospel to people in different cultures, I got to tell you, that's kind of the front row seat, I think, in where evangelical Christians should be thinking.
I think that it is, and I think that it's very difficult work, but I think it is worth the effort to take the time to learn what people already believe when you get there. Everyone already believes something, and if we're not very careful, they're simply going to mix together what they already believe with the gospel message that we present to them.
Now, when you start talking about missions in this light, again, there are some people who are going to say it's cultural imperialism to take the gospel to people in different cultures. You know, there really is kind of this myth of the innocent indigenous people. That just doesn't fit the Christian worldview. It doesn't fit the gospel.
Well, in fact, there is that myth of this noble savage out there. The more the world is globalized, the more we understand about the different cultures of the world, we do understand that nature is red and tooth and claw, and there is no part of the world that's not fallen. They need to hear the gospel.
Right. So whether we're talking about postmodern Western savages in highly industrial nations, or human beings found any place, the one thing that marks them all is that we are in desperate need of the gospel of Jesus Christ.
That's exactly right.
Now, the imperative of the Apostle Paul in Romans chapter 10 is simply this. If they do not go, if missionaries do not go, people who need the gospel will not hear it, and they will not be saved. Do you think evangelical Christians have lost something of that conviction as we're standing here, you know, in the year 2010 having this conversation?
I think that we have lost that zeal, and I think that we've lost it largely from a perspective of we think more and more that there are other ways that perhaps people could come to Christ.
All right, we need to talk about that when we come back. You know, the bottom line in all of this is that if there is a diminishing of missionary conviction among Christ's people, it's going to come back to the fact there has to be a lessening of conviction. If we really do believe that persons are lost without the gospel of Jesus Christ, then there is no question that it is our task to take that gospel, knowing that it will come at great cost. If we think that cost is too high to pay, we really don't believe what we say we believe. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world, you're listening to the Albert Mohler Program.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. We're talking about missions today and really a cutting-edge conversation about what's going on around the world where the Christian gospel is encountering a world of unbelief. And without apology, we're going to make very clear, we believe the New Testament clearly teaches, the Bible clearly defines the issues in such a way that we understand that the gospel of Jesus Christ is the only message that saves. We're going to talk about that more in just a moment. But I want to talk about the idea of a missionary and how that comes about. My guest today is David Sills. Dr. Sills is professor of cultural anthropology and Christian missions at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, the author of several books, including the new book, Reaching and Teaching, A Call to Great Commission Obedience. David Sills, define a missionary for me in terms of who you're going to find on the mission field today. Who is actually going?
The people that are going are the people that are aware of a need, both to hear the gospel and many other needs that exist in the world, people who are committed to do God's will, they're concerned for the nations, and they've been called by God to go.
Are they young or are they old?
They are both.
Okay, so there are some people who early on in life surrender and give themselves to this. They understand the urgency of it. Their lives are filled with passion and excitement for it. They can't wait to go. And so they're, for instance, here at the seminary by the legions, ready to go and to spend their lives. But, you know, I've been all over the world where I've run into Christian missionaries who are retired accountants and lawyers and bankers and farmers.
Yes, increasingly there are empty nesters who feel they remember a call perhaps that they felt earlier in life. They never acted upon it. God is beginning to stir them and give them a desire to go.
And many of them didn't even have the thought until after they retired, and they realized we have time and there is a need. So a lot of that's going on. I want to ask you a very basic question that I think is central to our understanding of missions today. When I was a boy and we had missions emphases in church, vacation Bible school and all the other things we did, we had a flag ceremony. And when we talked about taking Christ to the nations, we kind of thought of the nations as what we would now politically call the nation state. But in cultural anthropology and in modern missions, you really define nation differently. So define that for us.
Yeah, actually, in the Great Commission, when Jesus said to take the gospel to all the nations, the word that he used in Greek was really the word that we get our word ethnic from, ethnicity.
And there was no modern state.
There was no modern state. And those modern states that have come up through the years have changed many times. Jesus' commission was to take the gospel to all of the families of the world, the ethnicities of the world.
And I delight in what we call these groups now. We call them people groups. Right. And I think most Christians, even most evangelical Christians who are listening to this program today are probably unaware of how many there are. How many people groups, and this means a distinct cultural linguistic group, how many of them now exist?
The U.S. Center for World Missions estimates there are about 27,000 people groups in the world today.
27,000. Okay, so you look at the United Nations and you say, well, there are a couple hundred nations or whatever, and look at all their flags. But you talk about the nations in terms of the Great Commission, you're talking about over 20,000 different cultural linguistic groups. The report that I saw yesterday indicated that at least something around 7,000 of these groups have never heard the gospel.
That's right. About a third of the world's population and over half of the world's people groups, as you count them in other, whether you count the people as they exist in countries or in many countries, about half of the world's people groups and a third of the world's population has never heard the gospel.
And that means there is absolutely no Christian witness. There's not a fragment of scripture that has been translated into their language. There is no contact whatsoever. The report I was looking at yesterday indicated that people groups are divided between those who have been largely evangelized, those who have been partly evangelized, there's some contact with the gospel, and those with whom there's no contact with the gospel at all. And, you know, David, it looks like, for good reason, that's where a lot of the most cutting-edge Christian missions are now addressing their work, to the part of the world that has never heard.
That is true, and they have to be very careful how they go about that. With creative access platforms to get them into these countries, it makes it a little bit more difficult.
Okay, and they also have to know a lot, because you have to learn the language. And most people are just unaware of how many languages there are. I mean, you talk about 20,000, you're talking about at least distinct dialects and ethnicity and cultural and symbolic systems that require a lot of expertise. You know, the idea that you just get on a boat in the romantic understanding of historic evangelical missions and arrive somewhere with the New Testament and say, here I am, that's been replaced with a lifelong calling of coming to understand a culture, to come to understand a people group, understand its language, and be able to translate the gospel into terms that that people group can understand. You know, if you think about the great challenges in the world today, oh, there are many of them. But I have to tell you, for evangelical Christians, this just has to be the most exciting challenge you can think about. The challenge of learning what you need to know in order to go to take the gospel to people who've never heard of Jesus Christ.
That's right.
We'll be right back with more on the Albert Mueller Program. Dr. David Sills is here in the program studio with me. He holds dual doctorates to enable him to teach not only Christian missions, but cultural anthropology here at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. He's authored several books, including the new book, Reaching and Teaching, A Call to Great Commission Obedience. David Sills, I think many people, when they hear the word missionary, they assume that the call to be a missionary has to be some skywriting up in the clouds, dramatic kind of calling, whereas the call to do other things to the glory of Christ might be just more normal. That's not a healthy way to look at this, is it?
No, it's really not. And in fact, that misunderstanding probably keeps a lot of people off of the mission field who otherwise God might be leading to go.
So on the one hand, we need to hold out the vision and the calling of the missionary and make very clear that that this is a matter of God's calling. But on the other hand, we've got to confront a generation of evangelicals who assume that there are people who have to receive some special call to do actually what the New Testament just commands.
That's right. Faithfulness to Christ commands following the leading that he makes available to us, leading us through the things we become aware of. These are the ways that he guides us to his service.
You know, we live in a global world, and there are many people listening to this program today for whom it's true, if not for themselves, then for some of their loved ones and neighbors and friends. They may be serving with a big multinational corporation. And so, you know, they are deployed in the United States one day. They may be in living in Dallas this year, 2 years later, New York City. But increasingly, they could be living in Tokyo or Hamburg or Paris or, for that matter, Jakarta or Mumbai. And they don't think of that as requiring a special call. I mean, that call basically comes from the head office and says, you're moving from Mumbai to Jakarta. Why is it the Christians think we have to have some kind of earthquake to tell us to do what Christ commanded us to do?
I think, unfortunately, some of the callings that people have described in the past somehow became prescriptive, and then people felt like, well, that's what a call must be. But the highest and best use of anyone's life is to do what God wants you to do and the places where he leads you to do it.
And the Great Commission we're talking about here from Matthew chapter 28, where Christ said, go ye into all the nations and preach the gospel and make disciples and then baptize them in the name of the Father and the Son and of the Holy Spirit, where he tells us to go make disciples. That's not a suggestion. That's a command.
That's right. In fact, Hudson Taylor said the Great Commission's not an option to consider. It is a commandment to obey.
Now, when you start thinking about the call of missions and the commission that sends the church into missions, I want to make a couple of statements, and I'm going to call for kind of a true-false answer I want you to expand on. So, true or false, if the evangelical church really is evangelical, it's going to be a missionary movement.
Absolutely true.
Okay, and otherwise, it's simply not evangelical. We're not even living up to who we say we are.
That's right.
Okay, true or false, there's a greater need for people to give themselves in lifelong Christian service to missions than ever before.
I believe that's true.
And that's because we have such a proliferation of these cultural and linguistic groups who need the gospel.
And we become more and more aware of them, where they are, different things about them that would enable us to fulfill that.
And we have modern transportation that can get us there.
That's right.
And even where there are political and other obstacles, there are ways. Christ has ways of getting his people in order to get the message to people who desperately need to hear it. Okay, another one here. If you are, for instance, today, a Christian, and you're considering what you're to do with the rest of your life, and you're looking at all your job options and all the rest, shouldn't Christians say, well, maybe what I really need to do is use whatever skills I have, even in a time of this economic recession? If I don't have a job here, maybe I need to take those skills elsewhere and be an agent for the gospel.
I think absolutely. If the Lord gives you that opportunity and gives you that open door, I believe that we should all, as Spurgeon said, we are all Christians are either missionaries or they are imposters. He didn't mean that we all have to sell the farm and go. He certainly didn't, but we should have a heartbeat that is willing to do what God wants us to do wherever he leads us to go.
Well, that means if we're not going, we better be sending.
That's right.
And, you know, every faithful Christian ought to be in the position at all times, if not going, then sending. And so we need to be deeply involved in encouraging those who go, supporting those who go, making it possible for missionaries to go.
Yes, we should be goers or we should be senders. Neither is more important than the other, and neither is possible without the other.
Okay, now let's talk about the fact that when you look at the historic evangelical missions movement, the modern missions movement, early on there were people who went basically as evangelists, and they were quickly joined by people who went who could get access because they had specialized training, in particular doctors. So missionary medicine, very early, especially in places like China and Asia, caught on as a need. But the reality is, if you look at modern missions today, you'll find people deployed for the sake of the gospel who are indeed accountants, plumbers. You think about digging water and digging wells throughout much of the world. That's one of the most needed resources for people. And there are people who have different kinds of skills. You know, I think most Christians think that the missionary calling is going to require some skill that's beyond their reach, when they probably have a skill set right now that is needed somewhere that can get them in as an agent of the gospel.
Absolutely. Or they believe there's some spirituality level that is some super missionary, Christian hero kind of person that they're not. But in fact, missionaries are just people doing what God's called them to do, where he's called them to do it.
And they always have been real flesh and blood human beings. I mean, starting with the Apostle Paul, who shares his own struggles, his successes and his failures. You know, he's a real-life human being, and that's a part of the proof of the truthfulness of the New Testament and how it presents this so honestly. You look at the missionary leaders, the great names of the evangelical movement for the last 200 years, they were real flesh and blood human beings. They're not faces chiseled on some mountain somewhere.
That's right. And they had foibles, they had problems, they had difficulties in their own life. We look at them, we look in our classes here, we look back, we study their lives, and students are able to analyze the good and the bad and realize they were people like we are.
Okay, I want to ask you one final question that I think just has to be put out there anytime we're going to talk about the missionary call and the missionary challenge, and that is there are legions of Christian missionaries who have died in service of the gospel, literally been martyred in service to the gospel. I think there are many Christians listening today who think there was once a golden age of missions in which God just made Christians like that. And they're unaware that that is going on even today.
That is going on even today, and increasingly so. It's a gospel-hostile world.
And a gospel-hostile world means we need people who are willing to go out into that world, and we need even more who are ready to send to them.
That's right.
You know, you think about all this, and you recognize that if we really have our eyes wide open, if we really do understand what's at stake, we'll come to understand that the need for missionaries is today even greater than it's been in any time in the past. The world population has surpassed anything that William Carey and Adoniram Judson and Hudson Taylor could have imagined. Our understanding of people groups has exploded, exponentially increased the numbers of people groups we know we need to reach with the gospel. And now, we're not just talking about getting on a sailing ship and going for months. The average Christian can, in hours, be in a place that desperately needs to hear the gospel. Back with final thoughts in just a moment. Thanks for listening to the Albert Miller Program. You know, I thought about the program today, and I really felt a sense of urgency in having this conversation. And there are many things that can prompt that kind of urgency in us. We can all of a sudden realize, boy, we haven't talked about this, haven't heard enough about this in recent days. But for me, it was a bit different. This is what I get to talk about and think about just about every day. But I realize there are many Christians for whom this is a new conversation. And there are some of you listening to the program today who are going to say, I've never really thought about the missionary calling today. Let's remember that the Great Commission, as we talk about it, from Matthew chapter 28, is literally a command. Christ commands his church to go and to make disciples of all the nations. That means that going should be the natural posture, the natural operational status of the church. When we talked about the history of Christian missions with Professor David Sills just a few minutes ago, you know, I'll tell you, I was chastened, humbled by the fact that you look at the history of the Christian church and you realize there is a great deal of unfaithfulness in our history about taking the gospel. And even with the modern missionary movement starting back in the late 18th century and really starting to gain ground in the 19th century and then producing legions and thousands of missionaries through the 19th and 20th centuries, we realize that if the trends are not reversed and soon, we're going to be entering a new period in which there is just a shortfall in missionary service and a missionary sending and a missionary going. You know, as I began the program today, I mentioned that for some people, the word missionary is an antiquarian term. They say, well, yeah, that belongs back with Queen Victoria and just the kind of thing that would have been normal in the 19th century, maybe even in the 20th century. But we're living in a postmodern age. We're living in a time in which we respect cultures, and respecting cultures means we don't try to import new worldviews. Well, the problem is, just understand that the postmodern world really meets the gospel in a head-on collision at that point. The logic of the gospel tells us that all persons are in need of the gospel of Jesus Christ. That the gospel of Jesus Christ is the transnational, trans-ethnic, you might say, any human barrier or human definition message that saves. It is our responsibility to get that gospel to persons from every tongue and tribe and people and nation. And if that language sounds antiquarian and outdated to you, you just need to know that's the gospel. And if you're in a church that isn't sending and supporting missionaries, you're not a gospel church. And if you as a family are not holding high the sending and the going and the supporting of missionaries, then you're not a gospel family. I mean, the bottom line is that where you find a gospel people, you're going to find people going because they understand what it means to take the gospel in order that the nations will be glad in Christ. And where you find a gospel people, you're going to find a supportive, generous people who are making sure that those who go have the means to go and the means to stay and the means to make a difference. We'll continue this conversation in days ahead. Thanks for listening today to the Albert Mohler Program. Back tomorrow for Ask Anything Wednesday, when you'll set the agenda. We'll talk about what's on your mind.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.